Chapter 5. Immortality through annihilation. Angron. Pain can destroy people. It's possible to suffer so profoundly that no personality can exist in whatever space is left. Among the dying, that degree of suffering happens often enough, but it isn't limited to the terminal and the doomed. Pain can make a man scream himself out of his mind. Pain can hurt so much that it overwhelms everything except the body's capacity for agony. The creature that had once been Angron had learned fury could do the same thing. Insofar as he was still a he at all, Angron was reduced now to a boiling snarl of synapses. He possessed no capacity to reason, because the vortex inside his head allowed for no sensation or memory to ever evolve into thought. In place of a brain, he possessed toxic soup, riven with sparking cables. In place of a layered mind, he possessed rage so naked and profound that it bordered on exaltation. With no higher thought, everything was instinct, bleached red, backlashing against itself. The bitterest layer was that there was no longer enough left of Angron to lament his own fate. His Primarch brothers, deceived as they were, still possessed cause of tortured empathy at the heart of their delusions. No matter the deceptions they'd been offered and the lies they fed to themselves, some iota of cognition remained inside them, further feeding their power with the flow of regretful misery. But Angron, the brother that had screamed loudest of freedom, wasn't even allowed to see how much of a slave he'd become. Immortality came in many flavors. Not all were as sweet as they seemed. Maybe it would have caused more anguish had Angron been permitted a sliver of consciousness, enough to let him suffer with this knowledge. Another patron deity might have allowed such an awakened shard to exist within its puppet, feasting on the helpless realization of the soul in its grasp. But the Blood God was the father of massacres and the lord of war, and it cared nothing for cosmic irony. Its servants' anguish was irrelevant. Nothing mattered but the blood they shed, and few of its slaves served that purpose as well as the thing that had once been Angronius of New Syria. Angron ranged ahead of the armies, chanting his name. He soared above them, flying through the ashen soup that Terra's heir had become. Some of those behind and beneath him were mortal, his sons and daughters in ascension and damnation. Others were never born of flesh or blood or bone. They took shape from the realm behind reality. And he was like them now. He did not live as a mortal man lived. He was incarnated, tethered to this cold plane of existence only by bloodshed. Every second of his existence on Terra was threatened by the pull of the howling void. He killed everyone. He destroyed everything, holding on to incarnation only through slaughter. Beneath him was Avalon, one of the last remaining Palatine bastions. He knew this in the vaguest way, not as a fortress with defenders, he was past such coherence, but more as the memory of a promise that he chased. Someone was at Avalon. He knew this too, without conscious thought. He knew it the way a slave fears the kiss of a whip, even in his sleep. Someone was supposed to be here. Someone whose blood would run hot down his throat in steaming gulps. Someone whose death would anchor him to this life, freeing him from the pain of the pulling void. And yet, Avalon Bastion was a bloodless battlefield. The enemy had abandoned it, evacuating before the Horde. Angron sensed this utter absence of life as he soared above the silent battlements. He knew nothing of what it might mean tactically or logistically. He knew only that there was nothing here to kill, not the one being that needed to die, no one at all. That's when the acid sloshed behind his eyes again. There was a vision that came to him in these warless, bloodless moments, a single image boiling in the thresh of his senses. It was a goad, driving him deeper and spurring him on as it lashed at what remained of his mind. Wings. Wings of white, dappled with blood. Wings flaring from armour of gold. Wings he slavered to break in his clawed hands. Wings he would tear from their sockets of muscle and bone. He roared at the whiteness in his head, a venting of wordless rage. Nothing to destroy here. Nothing to kill. Dead stone, cold metal, empty. All of it empty. Wings. An angel's wings. Wings of white feathers. An angel of gold. Lightning sparked around the cranial implants, parasiting their way through his brain. It was almost savage enough to send him falling from the sky. Wings. His brother's wings. His brother the angel, whose blood would flow down his throat and bring strength and a cessation of the pain. His brother who wasn't here. Angron shook the sky with another carnosaur roar, an animal effort at discharging pain. It failed utterly as it always did. In these moments, even the paltry scraps of identity he still possessed were drowned in the war god's song that formed every atom of his being. But somewhere in the dust below, he sensed the heat of life, and that was enough to catch the attention of his diminished brain and its primal hungers. A flicker, no more than that, but enough. Angron dived blind, trailing flame, graceless as a gargoyle, fast as a falling star. There was prey here, after all. The death of the Titan, Conclamatus, was recorded in no Imperial archive, at least none that survived the Siege of Terra, and went unacknowledged by the palace's defenders. She was already written off as dead days before she died, already mourned by those with a mind to mourn her. Her princeps and crew had volunteered to remain behind at Avalon when the others fled the bastion. Not that they had much of a choice. The war had crippled Conclamatus, leaving her barely able to move. Rather than limp into no man's land and inevitably suffer reactor paralysis halfway to the sanctum, she had stayed at Avalon Bastion and taken a knee outside the towering wall. There she stayed in the ash and the dust, waiting. Her stabilizers were shot through, her locomotors violated by months of engagement in the outer palace. After retreating for repairs, Conclamatus was pressed back into service before a single adept brought a blowtorch near her broken skeleton. So she knelt in the dust for stability, not symbolism. Down on one knee with her ramshackle structure braced for maximal fire. She had what could generously be called a plan, though perhaps more realistically, an intention. When the Horde descended upon her, she'd unleash the reserves of ammunition she still possessed, what precious little had been left to her after she'd bequeathed the bulk of her stores to her retreating sister titans. She was a warlord, regardless that she was reactor-scarred and that she'd been driven to one knee, and she intended to die as a lord of war, just as she'd lived. Her arms held level where her crew imagined the horizon to be. The right arm was a bellicosa, humming with a low charge, still capable of bringing down a city block. The left was a claw, the talons mangled from overuse, but all still articulated, still capable of opening and closing. On her back, feeding directly into her shoulder cannons, was a pauper's sum of solid shot. Those macro Gatling blasters would whine and cycle and spin. They would make for a single and hopefully glorious final symphony. Her plan never came to pass. What went through the minds of her princeps and crew can only be speculated upon. The truth, perhaps cruel and perhaps plain, is that Conclamatus's last stand was just one among tens of millions in this war. Why should her crew be immortalized when so many others went unseen, unknown, or destined to be forgotten? The Horde pouring towards her cared nothing for the identity of the human lives protected by her armor plating, and her killer cared even less. With that in mind, the accounting of her final stand comes down to this. Angron's prey was sheathed in unsatisfying iron, so he struck not to kill it, but to shatter its shell. In that moment there were many things he did not know. He didn't know that he'd struck Conclamatus between her shoulder blades with enough force to break the machinery of her backbone and rupture dozens of pistons in her vertebrae. He didn't know that the Titan's princeps, who had racked up honours within the Legio Ignatum for 46 years of unbroken loyalty, had his sight burned away by the appearance of Angron so close. He didn't know that the princeps' soul was already torn from its housing of flesh and boiling in the warp before the man had even finished screaming. And had Angron known any of these things, he wouldn't have cared. Such truths were meaningless to the creature he'd become. What he knew was that within the Titan's body were lives he could end and blood that would flow. He tore out Conclamatus's reactor heart, heedless of the burns inflicted on his flesh by the core, venting its fire of artificial fusion. The warp essence that comprised his physical form regenerated even as it was destroyed. This was how he survived, thriving by destruction. Angron had achieved that most dubious apex, treading the final steps on the path to glory. He had attained immortality through annihilation. Insensate with rage, he hurled his burning burden at the walls of Avalon Bastion. There was briefly the flare of a false sun, a detonation among millions of others across this scarred planet. Then another wall fell, in a world of falling walls, and Angron cried out the only word he was still able to say. He screamed his brother's name.